I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. Welcome to the Productivities Podcast. I am your host, Mike Vardy, and this week on the show, I have a doctor. Again, I like bringing doctors on the show, but this one is a doctor of play. Well, not necessarily play, but we do talk about play a lot during this episode, and play with productivity, the balance of work and play. And it's one of the things I thought about as I was putting this episode together is I have this Baron Fig notebook that's called the Work-Play Notebook. And on one side of the page, and so if you're looking inside the notebook, there's two pages, and one of them is related to work, and so it's got the dot grid, and the other one is blank, so it's related to play. And I find that it's really fitting that I bring this up during this episode, because Kirsten Milliken has written the book Play-DHD, and it's about putting the play back in your work, in your life. And for people who may struggle with ADHD, and even those who don't, I think that this is the kind of thing that you can look at, because I just really find that I talk about this in the episode, is that sometimes you get categorized as someone who has ADHD, and I'm not at all being reductive about what ADHD is. My old podcast partner has ADHD. Ryan McCray, who's been on the show before, has ADHD. But what I really wanted to kind of get across here is that there has to be an element of play in your work. It makes life more enjoyable. You have to make time for it. And Kirsten is an advocate of that in a big way. And we talk about this during the show. We talk about, specifically surrounding ADHD. It comes up quite a bit. The idea of managing those symptoms so that you can realize your potential and have fun. Have that motivation, that attention that you need, focus, all of that stuff. And just be playful, having a more playful mindset. And we're just going to dive into it now. Now, if you're a Patreon supporter, you want to listen to the Patreon edition of the show, because you're going to get more content. But if not, there's still a lot here for you to enjoy. So without further ado, here's my conversation with Kirsten Milliken, the author of Play-DHD, here on the Productivityist Podcast. Enjoy. I'd like to welcome Kirsten Milliken to the Productivityist Podcast. Kirsten, thanks for joining me today.
Oh, Mike, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
I think it's time to play. What do you say? I think we should play.
It's always time to play in my world.
So it's fascinating, because when you think about productivity, people automatically associate, especially where I'm from in Canada, if you look up productivity, it's all around gross domestic product and efficiency and working more. And productivity isn't all about that. And it's funny, because it drives me nuts when people say, productivity is all based around work. And it's not. I think productivity has its capabilities and a total integration with the element of play as well. And you've got a book that's just come out, Play-DHD, right?
Yes.
And we'll talk about ADHD and play and all that stuff in it. But I want to get in and figure out how have you made the correlation between play and productivity? How have you managed to kind of draw people's attention to that? Because it's a hard thing to do.
It is. Well, especially for adults, because, we've all been told that we need to work harder and stop goofing off and all of those things that stick in our brains when, our inclination is to maybe go have a little bit of fun or goof off. Our bosses are standing there and telling us, no, that's not the thing to do. But in fact, what a lot of the research is showing, and what a lot of companies are catching on to now, is the fact that when we're playing, we're actually activating our brains, the dopamine system in our brains, in a way that helps us to be more creative, more open to different solutions, more energized, focused, attentive, able to problem solve, and just in a better mood. So not only are you getting people who are then maybe producing better work, but they're also less likely to be sick if they're feeling healthier and happier. So a lot of companies like IDEO and Google, and there's numerous other ones, have really latched on to the idea that by integrating the concept of play or playfulness into the work environment, that they really capitalize on much better work from their employees.
Now, for those people who are not in a large organization or an organization that's embraced this kind of thing, I'm looking at one of the blog posts that you've talked about, which is the Don't Lose the Day, Plan to Play.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've done is I theme my days. And I know that's something that's worked for me by saying that Saturday is family day. So therefore, I know that that's all associated around play. In fact, this past week, that's pretty much what we did. We did board games and so on and so forth and had a great time with it. But because I've structured that time, I think it's really important. You talk about that as well. How deep do you go into this? Like, how deep do you think people need to say, okay, you know what? I'm really overdoing it in the work element. I need to structure some time for play. Where do you recommend people get started?
I mean, first of all, reality is, you know, we don't have our old fashioned work and regular life separation anymore. It used to be you go to work from 9 to 5, you come home and that was your time. But we all know that that doesn't happen anymore. So it becomes even more important that we really have not work-life balance anymore, but work-life integration. And that means carrying through some of your playfulness, your positive attitude into work as well as into your personal life. I will, just as an example, I just had the book release, as a matter of fact, and people were asking, you know, where do you get started? And I said, you know, I created this thing for myself, PlayDHD, where my whole focus had to be on play. And I didn't start from that. I mean, we talk about the fact, especially as entrepreneurs, that we all do the work that we need to do, you know, for other people, that we need to do for ourselves. And certainly this came about at a time when my life was not really that playful. I was working really hard, long hours. But when I decided that this was going to be my new focus, all of a sudden, everything around me, I kind of looked at with a different lens. So, you know, conversations that I might have thought were ridiculous, inane, boring, whatever, at some point became kind of interesting and playful. Activities that maybe at some point I would have said, yeah, I don't really want to do that, whatever. I was using the old improv exercise of saying yes to, you know, everything and seeing what would come of things. And I mean, I jumped in with both feet. Obviously, that may not be realistic for everybody. Most people, especially adults, again, have a little bit of trepidation about taking on that persona of being more playful because they're professionals or, you know, maybe they have a serious group of friends or whatever. But finding opportunities. So one of the things that I suggest in the book as a starting point is to figure out what your play personality is. Dr. Stuart Brown wrote about play personalities. He had 8 of them. I think there's 9 in my book. But figuring out what your play personality is, and one of the ways to do that is to think about how you played as a kid. So, Mike, what do you remember about playing as a kid? What was your favorite thing to do?
Now, the first thing you mentioned is, when I think of that, is I used to collect hockey cards. And what I would do is I would make the teams out of the hockey cards. So I would do, I'd be in my room. And it's reminding me how my son is too. My son likes to play by himself. And I was in my room and I would organize the cards by teams and in divisions. And I would have them face each other and kind of leapfrog each other for playoff spots and things like that. I also do the same thing with, remember when we used to listen to Top 40 Countdowns and stuff like that on the radio?
Oh, Casey Kasem, yes.
Yeah, I used to make, like, you know, I used to have all my tapes and I would do the same thing. I would create, like, my own Top 10 or Top 40 Countdown. And it was one of the things I really enjoyed doing. I mean, a lot of kids would flip hockey cards around and play, you know, so they would end up trading cards with one another. I wanted to hold on to mine because I wanted to make sure I had a whole team that could go against another team. So that's nice. One of the things I used to do.
So one of the play personalities is actually the collector. So whether it's collecting cards or collecting buttons or collecting experiences, that's one way to play.
I still collect. I have all this Green Lantern stuff as I'm looking at it right now.
I was just about to ask, but you may not collect hockey cards, but what do you collect now? Exactly. So, and it sounds like a little bit of that is rubbed off on your son as well.
Totally.
Yeah. So oftentimes, though, you know, a lot of times we'll find that parents and kids have similar play types, but a lot of times we'll find that they have very different play types. And I'm sure among your friends, too, you find that they maybe are not all into collecting. They may like to do other things. And so oftentimes we're kind of tested because if we're going to play with our friends, we have to do things that they're going to enjoy as well as things that we're going to enjoy. So that opens us up to a whole world of different kinds of play. Most people are not just one type of player. So, you know, we have play personality types like the artist, the creator, the jokester, the storyteller, the director, the performer. All of these are different play types, and the competitor or the kinesthete is another one. So a lot of times you'll find people who really enjoy a lot of movement and dance and things like that. And that might also be integrated. The kinesthete who likes movement might also be also a competitive play type. So they might not only like to be moving, but be on in sports that have teams that are against one another. So all kinds of combinations of play types and all kinds of ways to play if you know what your play type is.
And so when it comes to planning that kind of stuff out, I mean, you mentioned motivation and getting motivated. Reading some of your work, like motivation is a tricky one, especially when you're talking to, you know, I mean, now we're shifting over to talk a little bit about ADHD is, you know, I mean, to get motivated, there's tasks that we don't enjoy doing and have a difficult time playing with. And then there's other ones that we just find complete joy and love to mold and shape. And how does that affect not just ADHD, people who are you know, who have ADHD, but also in general, like when you're coming across a task or something that isn't motivating at all, how right. do you turn it into something? Because you know you need to do it, especially in some of those situations. How do you convert it so it's something that you can find some joy out of, so it doesn't seem as taxing to you as you try to, you know, push it forward?
Well, first of all, you're right in that it's not just people with ADHD. I think we all struggle at times with attention and motivation. Just people with ADHD, often it's more apparent and it can be more of a struggle. Mm-hmm. And so one of my favorite heroes around play is Mary Poppins. And if you remember the scene, she says, in every job that must be done, there is an element of fun. You find the fun and snap, the job's a game. So oftentimes what we're doing is figuring out, first of all, if you know what your play type is and you can identify the task that maybe seems to be unpleasant, you can figure out what kind of play can you integrate into that activity. So one of the biggest challenges in April is people doing taxes, right? Yep. I know very few people who really enjoy doing taxes. A few of them I know, they're just weird. But right? But I will tell you that a lot of my friends enjoy having tax parties. It's something that they actually look forward to every year. So taxes aren't just this horrible thing that they're dreading. It's an opportunity to get together with their friends and have a party. So my friend Sarah Kesty says, you can take anything and turn it into a party and it makes it fun. And that's true for taxes as well. So that's, you know, if you have other people to do something with, you can turn it into a party. If it's only going to be you, it might be turning it into a party by turning on the music. I give the example over and over again that I hate cleaning my house because I honestly really hate cleaning my house. But when I have to do it, it means I either have to have somebody else who's about to arrive, so I need my house clean, or I have to turn on the music and have some fun. So finding ways to make less enjoyable tasks more enjoyable. Sometimes it's more subtle, like if you have to do some kind of filing, using colored folders, the energy that you get from just having those different colors, or instead of, you know, writing labels out, maybe making some picture labels by using your computer, just being a little bit more creative and doing something that's boring can also make things a little bit more interesting.
Yeah, I found that color is absolutely huge for me, in that it just creates an anchor. You know, it creates this sensory anchor for me that's like, okay, I know that this green color means productivity. It's because that's my brand, so that's related to that. Orange is personal. Like, I have very specific colors that I use to align with certain roles that I have. Do you find that's important for, again, people who have ADHD, as well as, I mean, again, and I think a lot of people misconstrue, or either maybe they don't. But I mean, I know that I was, it was funny. I was, I thought I had ADHD. Mm-hmm. And I went to my doctor said, he went and said, you just immediately prescription, immediate right. prescription.
Right.
And it turned out that I went and saw a couple other people and they said, you don't have it. You just have a lot going on. You do. Like, yeah. you said, you're not, you have no problem with, you have some elements of it, but it's only because you've taken on so much. Do right. people get confused with that? Because the immediate thought is, I can't focus on anything, so I must have ADHD. Like that's, and I think that's a misnomer, right?
Absolutely. One of the challenges these days, because we have so much to focus on with all the screens and all the, you know, everybody trying to do more in less time and, you know, the competition, especially for kids, of having to be engaged in so many different activities that they're competitive when they go to college and what have you. I think that all of that pressure and all the stimulation that's going on around us definitely creates the illusion sometimes of people having ADHD when it's more of an external factor as opposed to their brain wiring being different. So it is a challenge. And there are a lot of other things that can create similar symptoms. And it's something that anybody who's looking to get diagnosed needs to make sure that it's not just a 10-item checklist that they're going through with their primary care physician, but that they're actually going to a professional who knows how to differentiate between some of the other things that can look like ADHD.
So when it comes to ADHD and ADD, we talked before we started recording about Rick Green, and I watched, my wife and I watched the program, the Totally ADD program with him and Patrick, and really well done. And lists came up, and my wife's like, you love lists. You absolutely, that was, she started to put these things together. I'm like, well, let's not get, I go, I love lists, but I'm a productivity strategist. So of course I love lists. It's what I teach people. But one of the things that I want to touch on is the idea of the right types of lists.
Exactly.
Because I think that what happens is, and this happens with people getting things done methodology, which is a great productivity methodology, not for everybody, but it's been widely touted. And I know David Allen, and I think it's a fantastic tool for some people. Yeah. But there gets to a point where there's almost too many lists. When you're dealing with somebody that's either that anyone, it doesn't matter whether, I mean, I would imagine there's probably differentiating factors, but when you're trying to encourage them, say, hey, make a list, what are the elements of a list that you want to see, you know, in that list, as opposed to how many lists they make or whatever? Like, when you're looking at this and helping somebody cope with all the things they've got going on, what do you recommend they do in terms of putting a list together?
There are a few things. Actually, so one of the chapters in the book is called Plan to Play. And one of the things I talk about with some of my clients is that they need to start their to-do lists with the things that they want to do that are activating to them or playful to them, right? Mm-hmm. So if you know this week you're going to have family day, you want to make sure that that's on your list for the week. And you want to make sure then that it's in your calendar for the week, because one thing that I know is that I can make lists all day long, but if I don't assign a specific time and day to do those activities, they usually don't get done.
Right.
Because there's always something else sparkly or more interesting or whatever, you know, during my day that'll capture my attention. But if I have it written into my calendar, then I'm more likely to do it. So I encourage people, though, to first start with their list of what kind of fun activities would they like to do during the week? What are their obligations that they have to do during the day and during the week? And how can they combine some of those things? So you want to make sure, again, that there's a good integration so that some of the work activities can be done maybe in a playful setting, maybe your bathtub instead of at your desk, or with some music on instead of sitting in silence. And that you're also either front loading or at least planning during your week to have some playful activities that are motivating to you to kind of get you through some of the more difficult stuff. And I do talk about using those play activities to front load a lot of times. If you know that you've got a long, boring task that's going to be happening, say tomorrow at 3:00, and it's really going to be difficult for you to get started, to feel motivated, and to maybe stick with it, you want to make sure and plan some time before you have to sit down to do something that's going to be playful, that's going to be, again, activating the dopamine system in your brain so that the frontal lobe area, which is where your executive functions are kind of prepared and help you to get started with the project and to be able to persevere as you go through this long, maybe boring, potentially boring task. Taking breaks, it's also important to put that into your to-do list and into your planner when you've got longer tasks to do. And those breaks need to be something that, again, are triggering the dopamine so that you're not just getting up and maybe playing a game on the computer just to waste the time, but that you're actually doing something like maybe taking a walk out into the grass or telling a joke to a friend, you know, having a good laugh, something that kind of gets your juices going, if you want to say it that way.
Would you consider meditation a form of play? This just came to me as I'm sitting there. I'm like, you know, because meditation is one of those things that I think is we do, when we take breaks, I think that's one of the things we can do to kind of do a reset. You know,
yeah.
Do you consider it to be a form of play?
I think that there are forms of meditation that are absolutely playful because some of the aspects of play are very similar to mindfulness or meditation, which is being very present focused, allowing whatever happens to happen and kind of going with the flow. Feeling like there's no, you can't really fail at it. You're just observing and allowing things to happen. So there is some playful aspects to meditation. I think when you're first getting started, it maybe doesn't always feel so playful.
No. But there's tools like Headspace and that are trying to make it more playful too. I think that we're seeing, and I've noticed this with even the task management tools out there and calendar tools. I've got this calendar tool called Free Time that I use, and it tells you every day how much free time you have. Now that might be a bit of a scary thought for someone with ADHD, because like, oh, what
there's
am I going to do
such
with that
thing as free time? There's such a thing.
but we're seeing some really innovative things done with technology in the space. I mean, you've got some stuff that you've listed on your website, such as the time timer, right? Which kind of, you know, I mean, again, there's this idea that the Pomodoro technique is another one, you know, you have the tomato timer, all that. Like, you're seeing these interesting ways for people to monitor their time and not only that, but be more intentional with it. And I think that's really the goal with play too. I'm a big believer in, I mean, right now my kids, might even be able to hear them outside. It's a professional development day for them. So they just got home from the park and the propensity to want to go out and play with them is strong. But I also know that family time doesn't start till 5:30 for me today. So that's scheduled in there. Now, are you adamant about are you specific with the stuff that goes in your calendar? So does it, you have like send these emails, or do you have work be in email mode or be in play mode? Like, how specific do you recommend people go?
I will tell you. So I do have ADHD. And
yes,
one of the things when you have ADHD is, you know, this week it might be that I need to get so specific about, you know, I'm going to send 5 emails between this time and this time. And next week I might abandon that altogether and do it differently.
So you need the flexibility in there, basically.
Absolutely. You need to have flexibility, but you have to make sure that you still have a plan for yourself. So I can't just say, you know, I'm not going to get to my emails. I don't have any plan to get to emails, because honestly, I won't. Unlike a lot of people, I don't feel that they're that urgent. So the calendar
can act as a trigger, right? And then if you do have a to-do list, which you have a to-do list, right, that you look at?
I have a to-do list, but it's always put into my calendar.
Tasks are right there next to
it.
Right. Okay.
So my strategy is like a brain dump of everything that needs to get done. And then I add to that during the day. But then all of that has to get moved into a calendar and assigned to a time and day.
Right. See, for me, I've got my calendar that gives me my daily themes, which act as anchors. They're those, okay, that's what I know I need to do. And then there obviously are the date specific appointments, very getting things done centric, where I know that I'm meeting with somebody, like for example, right now, you know, like that's it. That's a date specific. I show up at 6:00 in the evening.
We showed up on time today. That was so impressive.
Exactly. Well, I mean, what do you get? I mean, I think it was a foregone conclusion that you and I would probably show up on time. But then what I do is I do have my task management application, which is separate from my calendar, that gives me the specifics. So if I'm looking at, like, today is writing mode day, right? Like, it's my writing day because it's Monday. I will then look at my tasks in my task list and see which ones I've assigned the tag writing. So that way I know that I'm not going to be distracted or diverted by those shiny other things, such as read this book or, you know, do whatever. It's, I want to look at what writing tasks I have to do. So I give my brain fewer decisions to make, which it sounds like that's pretty much what you have to do as well.
Absolutely. The fewer decisions I have to make, the better. I mean, even to the point of, yes, if I'm going to go to the gym in the morning, I have to make sure that my clothes are out the night before so that in the morning it's not a decision of going or not. And where are my clothes? My clothes are there and I'm going.
That brings up a really interesting point. How important, I mean, I believe that morning and evening routines are critical for anybody.
Yes.
How important are they for people who struggle with ADHD as well?
I think routines, period, are really important.
Yeah.
So, and morning and evening are kind of easy time frames, mm-hmm. because,
they're bookends of the day, right?
They are bookends. And, you know, we know that getting into bed is the last thing we're doing. And so we can kind of, move backwards from that spot to what we're going to do before that. And the same thing with waking up in the morning. You can go forward from that moment when you know you're getting up. Whereas the rest of the day can often be a hodgepodge unless you have specific routines that are already set. So I think that exactly as you're saying, making sure that you have routines at the beginning and end of your day, and a lot of them around making plans to get your to-do list done, to focus on your themes, to have fun, make sure you have fun.
Do you plan the night before? Or do you plan the morning of, or do you plan at both times in case things have changed between you going to bed and waking up the next day?
Right now, my plan is supposed to be playing with my dogs. Can you hear my puppy in the background? He's very insistent that I come out and play.
You have your dogs. I have my kids in the background. It's working out real nice.
It's working out really great. My little Frenchie is very insistent on playing with me many times.
Well, you have snow outside right now, which I find fascinating in Portland, Maine.
Yes, I'm finding it fascinating, too. It was 70 degrees 3 days ago, and now we have snow.
And I'm on the West Coast, closer to the other Portland, and it's sunny and we're doing pretty well over here. I can't believe the weather is acting the way it is. But yeah, I mean, basically, like when it comes to routines, do you start did you slowly build your routines up, or did you have how far along do you routinize your day? Because, I mean, I know that I have a specific routine that's got about 5 things in the morning and about 3 things in the evening, but initially it only had 3 things in the morning and I slowly added to them because I had a bit more flexibility and wanted to have a bit more of a, I wanted to make sure I read every morning for 25 minutes. I never used to do that. I want to make sure that, I maybe go for my morning walk on Sundays, which I never used to do. Like, have you added to your routines over time, or is it just something that do you try to keep them as basic as possible?
Definitely adding to them and again, always changing things. So, we just recently started using Blue Apron, which is the new food to your home kind of thing. And so on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night, my younger son and I now cook these meals together, whether or not there's something he wants to eat or not. He likes cooking. And so we have this new routine now that got built around a new thing that we decided to try. It happens to arrive on Thursday night. So that kind of helped us to set this routine for ourselves. So sometimes there are external events that kind of trigger what our habits and routines are going to be. And then other times, like going to the gym. I used to go to the gym every morning at 6 o'clock. I stopped for a while because of some injuries and illnesses. I then set my schedule because I do have a job part time. I tried to schedule it so I would go in the afternoon. I'm finding that afternoons do not work for me. So now I'm going to go back to my morning schedule and hope that kind of works for me again. So sometimes it's playing around with things, setting that priority. As you said, you know what your theme is. You may not know, moment to moment during the day what you're going to be doing within that theme, but you know that you're going to fit those things in. And so the same thing is true, I think, for myself and for a lot of my clients and friends that, we set what our intentions. We want to eat healthy. And how are we going to build a routine around making sure that we shop to get the foods that we want, and we plan our meals, and maybe we spend time, with our family doing the cooking, or maybe we cook extra and freeze it so that we have that for the meals during the week, going to the gym, and then, of course, getting work done, doing your writing, and maybe your reading, and doing your marketing, and all of those good things have got to fit in. So depending on what's going on, the more they become routine or habits and get put into certain spots during the week, the more likely they are to happen.
Well, I'm going to definitely put into the show notes the fact that you also have an article at Totally ADD where it says how to write a book when you have ADHD, because you just finished a book.
I did.
Well, you didn't finish it. It's been published. And you did. So I think that that's it's, you know, I've had a blast talking today, Kirsten. I mean, I'm looking forward. So you're doing a talk at the National Association of Professional Organizers Conference.
I am.
Four Play. Is that what it's, or is it four? How do you?
Yep. Like, it's getting shit done.
Oh, is that what it is? Okay. They just wouldn't let you put that in the title.
Did they not let us? I don't remember. If they let
it says 4-4 play, the secret ingredient to ADHD motivation.
But, well, it was originally titled How to Get Shit Done.
Well, and at the end, it does say learn how to identify demotivating tasks and create a personalized plan of action to help your clients get S*** done. So I guess that's probably why
they rewarded it for us. That's good to know.
So, I hope I'm going to be able to check that out. I may have to move my flights around. And frankly, you know what? It's funny. I was at my doctor's the other day, and he loves hearing about where I travel. And he said, "Oh, you're going to Atlanta. You have to do this." And I said, "Well, my wife, like, I'm only there for a couple days. Actually, I'm in and out, not even a couple days." And he said, "Well, as your doctor, I don't advise you to travel so quickly after getting there. And I think you need at least 2 days." So I said, "Well, if you want to give me a doctor's note to give my wife, I can show you her. I can take pictures of her tearing it up in front." But we'll see. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. So Adam, I'm looking forward to meeting Adam. And I strongly encourage everybody to check out this book, Play ADHD. And I love anybody who can do a portmanteau too, because productivity is a portmanteau. Play ADHD, total portmanteau. It's
there
fantastic.
There you go.
And it came out suitably on April Fool's Day.
It did. We planned that. It was so much fun. So absolutely. And I just also want to tell you, being a doctor is a beautiful thing. So I also will give anybody who's looking on my site or who gets the book a prescription to play from myself, Dr. Milliken, so that you can bring that to whoever will accept it as proof that it really is something that you should be doing all the time.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today. Where can people find you on the internet? I know we got the website in there, but Twitter and all that stuff?
Yep. So I'm on playdhd.com. I'm on Twitter at playdhd, Facebook playdhd. And of course, you can Google me, because there's nobody else in the world that has the word playdhd in their title. So.
Thanks again for joining me, Kirsten.
Thanks, Mike.
You know, this was a great conversation to have. I can't wait to see Kirsten in Atlanta when we're speaking at the same event. But one of the things that I wanted to really make sure I got across was the idea that play is so... If we spend all of our time working and don't set aside that, like for me, that themed family day is all about play. The family time that I have once my kids get home from school, and actually as I'm recording this closing, they're getting out of school early today. So I only have about an hour left of time to really get down to work. So it's giving me this focused work time that I need. Whether you have ADHD or not, it's really important to make time for play. Schedule it in some form or another, whether you want to get really regimented with it in your calendar or whether you want to have more of a themed component to it. But I strongly suggest you pick up Kirsten's book, Play ADHD. As we're recording this, it is en route to my home, so I can't wait to dig into it. I'm reading a lot more lately, and I'll have more thoughts on it in a future episode, likely in one of the bonus episodes that are exclusive to Patreon supporters. So if you're interested in supporting the show, having the capability to check out some of the perks we have to offer, and supporting the show in a monetary fashion, you can do so by going to patreon.com/productivityist. If you can't do that or are not able to do that, then another way that you can support the show is by sharing the show far and wide. You can share it via social media, but another great way to do it is to rate or review the show, or rate and review the show in iTunes or your podcast home or aggregator of choice. That way people can find it and we can get more people listening to the show. If you have recommendations for guests, that kind of thing can come through there as well. So, and I read all the feedback that I'm getting on iTunes and elsewhere to make sure that I can make the show better, because that's my goal. I want to help more people, and the people I have on the show also want to do the same. That's it for this week's episode of the podcast. I am your host, productivity strategist and founder of Productivityist, Mike Vardy, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.